Talking Bollocks, a Go Loud original podcast. Sponsored by Right Style Furniture. Right price, right style, right now. Visit rightstyle.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Are you in the middle of turning your house into a home? Get down to Right Style Furniture, an Irish family-run spot that's actually sound and won't sell you a sofa that looks like it's out of a skip. The house package deals are unreal. Sofas, beds, dining sets, the full works from just €3,649. Plus, they're in Fontaines, Belgard and now Omni Park as well. They're open 7 days a week and open late on Thursdays and Fridays in Fonthill and Omni. Handy if you're walking all day. I got my corner sofa in it and in the fire brigade to get me up off the thing. Visit www.roystyle.ie and when you shop in store, tell them Terence and Calvin sent you and they'll throw a discount on top of that as well. So get down to Roystyle Furniture today.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in the ground. Tell your body again. Work it hard and long. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Go down. Go down. Go down. Come up.
Right, this week's episode, I'm here and I'm joined with Mark McCabe. Mark, yeah. It feels actually mad saying that. You know what I mean? I don't know, a bit of a surreal moment. I think it's a long time coming. It's just one of those names that culturally, do you not realise how big your name is?
No.
No?
No, not really. No, because when you say that, like, and I'm going, what's this fella saying?
Mm.
What's this? Is that for real? Is he saying that? Or is this just like, you know, to make the podcast better?
No, but like, I was saying it to my mates. I was like, yeah, I'm going on to do the podcast there. And they're like, who have you going on? I was like, Mark McCabe. And they're like, really? I was like, yeah, it's come to that. Like, you know what I mean? It's happening now. Do you not feel that?
No.
Really?
No. Yeah, no. Like, it blows my mind when I think that that's the perception.
Yeah.
You know, because I just do what I do because I love doing what I do. I don't do it for any other reason, you know. It's not that I'm looking for fame or anything. It's just something that's happened and I happen to really enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
So it's, I'll take it. I'll take it for sure. You know, bring it on. Give me some more ego there.
yeah, little ego. I fucked up there. Should have started slowly. And then said, you know, built you up. Never going to get you back down now. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
no gratitude on this podcast.
I'll puff up my chest here now.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what else are you saying? What's your name again? We were just joking there because you actually do 98 FM as well.
Yeah.
So, is that every Saturday?
Every Saturday, yeah. From four, yeah.
From
so,
four?
Yeah, yeah. So, they just moved me. So, I used to be 6 to 9, so they pulled me back to 4. So, 4 to 8 now. So, banging out some nice tunes at 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, which is class.
Yeah. They play some belters in the morning.
Oh, they do, to be fair.
I think that should be illegal because how are you supposed to go to work when, like, it's 9 o'clock in the morning, you're sick on the radio and Storm Queen, Look Right Through was on and you're like...
That's what you want.
Bringing in sick today. You're
That's
not going
what you
in
want.
Book, you know what I mean? So I think it should be illegal. Don't you know, wait, there's a watershed.
Yeah,
should have that in the mornings.
Keep
should only be able to play the good tunes after 11. So now everyone is in work. You can play them in. You can play the tunes in work to keep it pumping, to get you through the day. Playing at 9 o'clock in the morning when you're on the way to work and you're like, it's not too late for me to do a U-turn and go to the pub.
And bail. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm going to an early house here. So that's my, I think that needs to be brought up. You know the way there's rules. What's a commission, the man? What's the
commission of mine?
Yeah, that needs to be brought in there. Like, look, there's a watershed in the mornings as well.
There's enough rules as it is, so look, let them away with it.
Yeah, Mark, I have a million and one questions, so I don't even know how to really approach this podcast without just diving straight in. But I suppose I'll start off with a kind of light, funny one, right? What is the weirdest gig you've ever been booked for?
Oh man, wow.
Now, I'm talking like 40th in a gar club, like with the little disco lights, table full of like peanuts and cocktail sausages.
I've tried to delete these things from my brain, you know, because I have had some really sort of awkward moments where I was like, just get me out of here, you know. And luckily, the last couple of years, it's got way better.
Yeah.
So like everything I do now, I'm actually really looking forward to. And maybe because I've got a little bit more confident that I know I can sort of take things on. But like if I go way back, the awkward stuff would have been the fact that there were people there looking for me to play Maniac.
Yeah.
I know that sounds a bit weird, but like I would be playing as, you know, a vinyl DJ trying to, you know, shake that. This was before what's happened in the last sort of 15 years in particular. I would have gone and tried to be this, you know, cool, credible DJ banging out, you know, whatever it was at the time, progressive trance or whatever. And then there'd be this little pocket of people that were waiting for Maniac or something like that. And that was super awkward because it was like, I can't do Maniac. This doesn't make sense.
Fit, yeah.
I've actually just thought of one there, which is probably the peak. There was a gig in Limerick and they bussed a load of people into a hotel in Limerick and they had Tall Paul on. This was mental. it was just a mental night, and people were off their chops. That's what the gig was, and it was great. We were there as a broadcast partner for the station that I was working for at the time, so we broadcast outside, and then, you know, we went in after the show. So they showed up to my hotel room at 5:30 in the morning, knocked on the door, and they were like, they seem like they're a little bit, you know, the atmosphere is a little bit weird down there. We need to do something to sort of pep it up a little bit. Is there any way that we'll pay you? Is there any way you go down and do Maniac? Now, this was in 2006. So, like, there wasn't that history or that legacy with Maniac. This was a load of people that were completely off their chops. And this person thought it'd be a great idea for me to go down and do Maniac in the middle of it. Just wasn't the right time, wasn't the right place, and it was just like, nah,
it wasn't like
it just wasn't happening. But luckily, like, I've got away with a lot, and there has been super awkward corporate moments where I've been asked to go and, you know, perform Maniac at some reception or some award ceremony or something, and people are just there and they're in their shirt and tie and they're just like, whatever type of thing. But, like, I've learned, it's what you make of it. Like, if you go into a room and you're actually, you know, you've got energy and you have a laugh with people and you're relaxed, then you can get away with it. It can work, you know? Whereas if you think it or overthink it too much and try to be too serious about it, then it becomes a problem, you know?
Yeah, it's going to weigh on your mind then. What's your earliest memory of music? Like, what got you into music? When you think back and you be like, I remember this moment and that's what made me fall in love with
it. Yeah, my dad. Like, not because of the music that he listened to himself, but he made a point every Sunday night to record. BBC Radio 1 used to simulcast the TV show Top of the Pops, and he used to record it off the radio, so we'd have cassettes, and he used to do it for us every week for whatever reason. I don't know, I never actually got the chance to ask him why he did it, but I always remember having those cassettes and listening to this kind of Top of the Pops music, sort of late 80s, early 90s. And he then was doing school discos and stuff like that. He wasn't a DJ, but just he was the guy who had the cassettes of Top of the Pops. So he'd go into the school and play these cassettes, you know?
Yeah.
And he had this amplifier and this speaker that he used for those. And that was like my earliest memory of all of that. Like, I think that's where it kind of tweaked. I used to take that amp then when he wasn't using it, and I'd bring it up to my room and I'd plug in a tape deck and I'd start playing stuff. And the fact that I was playing it out of the speaker and it was loud, you know, and it was like,
feel it.
You could feel it, yeah. Something just clicked and hooked in with me on that. Like, so I think that's definitely where it started.
And then how do you go from there to becoming a DJ? Like, what makes you think, you know what, this is it now? Is this something that you always wanted to do? Like,
yeah,
you know, when you're in school, like, fuck this, I'm going to be a DJ.
Yeah, like, and it wasn't necessarily that I wanted to be a DJ. It was that I definitely wanted to work in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
I definitely wanted to be, you know, involved with a stage, or I didn't know at the time, but like I built a stage in my bedroom as a kid because I used to play drums, and I had the drum kit up on the stage, and I got a couple of lights and I put them up, you know, and like, as a kid, I was messing with smoke machines. Like, my parents were going mad because I'd have the house full of smoke, like, and I'd have lights and stuff going in the room. And I was always just fascinated by, I guess, the transformation in a room when you turned off the lights and you made it something like a disco, even if it was just turning on a set of like disco lights, the fact that the room changed color, stuff like that. I was always fascinated with all of that. I used to run a cable up into my sister's room. She had a room up at the top of the house, and I'd be downstairs in my room, she'd have her mates up there, and I'd be playing music, and I'd have a microphone, and I'd be doing links in between the songs, you know, for her. Like, so it was just always something that I had this want to do.
Yeah.
And it just kind of progressed from wanting to do it, like the first sort of radio experience I had, you know, them microphones that you can buy that you can tune into your radio.
Yeah.
So I got one of those and I wired in an aerial and put the aerial out the top of the house.
So anyone going past so,
it? Yeah. And from that, like, it just, I started to listen to pirate radio. So I was listening to Club FM, Sunset and Pulse FM, which was the, you know, the big pirate back in the 90s in Dublin. I got in touch with somebody who I knew that was on that station, got brought out to that station, just was like, wow, this is like, this is me. I want to get on this, you know? And they let me go.
Yeah, how like underground was that back then? You know, because when you say pirate radio, it literally makes it sound like you have a balaclava on while you're doing this. You know what I mean? Oh, no one can know where we are.
Yeah,
we're gonna be shut down.
It's not like it was in London. London, it used to be really like they used to hide transmitters under like floorboards.
Yeah,
and they'd be linking from one tower to the next tower and stuff like that. Like because they had like a government agency that were on it. Like
yeah,
so they were shutting people
down.
That
was proper pirate.
That was proper pirate. Yeah. Like we were getting away with it because they didn't have the money to fund the lads in the Jeep to go and figure out where these lads are coming from. And there was no pressure from the sort of commercial sector to say, shut these guys down. Yeah. That changed because we started to get, you know, attention. People started to listen to us, you know, so.
Would that be because you were playing a genre of music that they were never going to play?
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you were taking their consumers.
Like. Yeah, exactly. And we just happened to land with Pulse at the right time when dance music was kicking off, like mid-90s, and it just started to rise and all the corporate sort of involvement with, you know, Gatecrasher and Cream and the Superclubs and Ibiza, that movement. We were right at the bottom. We were in there, you know?
Yeah.
And it just took off, like.
And where does the MCing come from? Because like that's a big UK thing, and I feel like it's never died down in the UK. It's kind of died down over here. There's some sort of a bit of a resurgence, and some people are trying to bring it back. But I feel like it kind of peaked, and they never really got it back. Whereas in the UK, it's just constant.
Yeah,
like there's always MCs going in the UK.
Yeah, it's gas. I see like on TikTok, I come across all these kids from Manchester and Liverpool, and they're spitting stuff, and it's just like that's so cool.
Yeah.
Like, are you calling me an MC? Am I an MC?
Well, I imagine you would be, wouldn't it? Like, that's
quite. Yeah, well, I guess.
You know?
I never really thought of myself like that. I used to listen to, like, Ultrasonic and stuff like that and Scooter, and I loved that kind of. That hype.
Ad-libbing over the songs.
Yeah, yeah. Even though, like, it's total nonsense. Like, I mean, if you listen to Scooter's lyrics.
Oh, just fucking like, Toya shoes.
Yeah.
The painted cow.
Exactly.
Where is the fish?
Nonsense.
Can I just. We went to see Scooter about 4 years ago, and this is the thing as well. Scooter isn't your man.
No.
Scooter is the band.
Yeah, yeah. That's
like,
a show.
I don't know his name, like, wherever. Yeah. But, like, everyone always thinks it's Scooter
as your Baxter.
Man. Yeah. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's about 70 something at this stage, yeah.
So we went to see them and we thought, like, it'd be one of those, oh, nostalgia, it'd be grand. They fucking
banging.
Blew the roof off the
banging.
Place. They came back then, like, 2 years later and I went with a different set of mates and I was selling it to them. I was like, lads, trust me. And they said it was one of the best gigs they were ever.
There you go. Yeah.
Banging.
Yeah.
And your man's ma was actually there.
Yeah.
So he was like, oh, it's my ma's birthday today. I was like, imagine how old she must be.
Yeah.
Okay, that fella's old enough, like.
He is.
But like that sort of stuff, it does catch on.
Yeah, they're the godfathers.
The godfathers.
They really are, you know. So yeah, me being an MC, like, I don't put myself up against the likes of that. But I was always into that.
Yeah, let's say you were an MC.
Yeah.
Right, we'll do it that way.
I guess I am. I guess it came from wanting to stand out and be a little bit different, like, you know, so when we were doing the shows for Pulse in the Temple Theatre and places like that, you can't just go up and sit there and play tunes.
Yeah.
That's like, if you're Mara Bucato or whatever, fair enough. You know, you got away with that because you were playing your own tunes and that's why people were going. Whereas when I was starting off, I was playing other people's tunes, ultimately. Mm. So you have to do something more. And for me, I suppose it was the engagement between me and, you know, the kids that were at the gigs. And that's where it sort of kicked off, I guess, because I felt somewhat like a celebrity with Pulse because I was the guy doing the gigs that we were running to fund the station. That's how we used to make the money and how it was made possible. No one was paid, but the lads who were running it like needed to pay the electricity bill and stuff like that.
Always,
you know? So they used to run gigs and they did pretty well out of them as well.
Yeah, I remember because I grew up in town and I remember some of the, like, obviously I was too young, but you'd heard of them.
Yeah.
And you'd hear, like, the Temple and the Ambassador and stuff like that as well. And these places used to be packed and they'd be on frequently enough.
Yeah,
as well. It's mad to think that that's just all completely gone now.
Yeah.
That's like a forgotten time.
Yeah.
Imagine you were saying that to your son there. Like, if you drove past the Temple now and you're like, I used to play in there. He'd be like, what?
He'd be like, what?
Church. Like.
Yeah, yeah. And that's like, the thing about it was that it wasn't just four walls that were plastered and set up as, you know, a nightclub.
Yeah.
It was like you had that sort of gothic influence, you know, that real sort of stature in that building. The steeple is huge. Yeah. You walk up to the place and you're like, what the hell is this? Like,
yeah.
And then you walk in and the main room is like banging, flipping Clockwork Orange night or Gatecrasher or something like that, you know? So, yeah, it was class. But that's where it all kicked off. That's where I was asked to do the main room and Al Gibbs was asked to do the crypt. He wanted to do the crypt because that's what he was kind of into, you know? And, you know, look, the story as it goes is Al started Maniac. Like, I mean, if that's where we're getting to in terms of, like, me as an MC, Al was not really interested in that side of it. Like, I was doing the commercial thing, and part of that process was that people were requesting Maniac be played, and there was a little bit of momentum around a rap that was being done on this 12-inch version of the SoundCloud remix of Four Rhythms Maniac. And that's just, we recorded it in the Temple Theatre, played it on the radio, and it just kicked off.
Where did you even come up with it? Like, how did you even say, like, I'm going to do this tonight?
So the guts of it was there. Like, so the guts of it was there. The structure was there, but I didn't know Al's version as such. So it was more a case of, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this bit in that sort of version. So I kind of added my own stuff. But on the night that we recorded it, it was just an ad lib. It was just like I had been doing it a few times. So I had a rough thing in my head.
Yeah.
But it was just because it stuck that night. Like, whatever came out was what came out, and that's what got played, and that's what people got to know, and that's what ultimately became the final version that was released. So it was all just like an accident to a certain extent.
Is it one of those moments, though, isn't it, like where the kind of planets aligned and like it's a genesis of something huge? Like, I couldn't believe, because only last year you put it on Spotify, and like, this fella's at the missing the boat with that, because that thing's about 4 billion streams that have been played from like YouTube and SoundCloud and ripped off CDs. And
you had to
jump on that fucking boat earlier. Like,
yeah, but there's two things there. One is that you can have the talent, you can have the idea, you can have the track, you can have the backing, you can have the finance, or not. Like, you can be on, you know, TikTok or Instagram and have the following, but something happens. And it is that the planets align and the stars align, and it can be something as mad as Maniac, or it can be something like Shane Codd's Get Out My Head that just happened in COVID.
Yeah,
was the right time, was the right place. He had been banging away in the background for years before that, you know, but it just, that right moment came along. There's no control in that. It just happens. You get lucky.
Yeah.
You know, and I got really lucky, like with Maniac, in the sense that it's still knocking around, you know.
Yeah.
And then the other part of it is
about Spotify.
I always felt that it didn't need to be pushed into people's faces. And I'm convinced one of the reasons it's had as much longevity as it has had is because I didn't push it. I didn't rinse it. When it became a hit in number one officially, or in 2000, I wasn't out there rinsing it and being everywhere and doing everything. I was kind of standing back and going, okay, let's just see what happens here. And then that eventually became something that was like, I'm not so sure I want to be this guy.
Mm.
And then in 2015, I went, okay, it's still knocking around. It's doing its own thing. I don't need to do anything to this. You know, it's just got its own life. It's got its own momentum. And it was the sort of the rebirth of it in 2015 where I embraced it and kind of knocked away any of the sort of negative feelings I had towards it, because it's like, you don't get a hit without a writ. It just doesn't happen. There's always something or someone in the background that wants to sort of mess it up.
I don't know how to word this, because I don't want to come across as offensive, but like, do you feel, not ashamed, but do you feel like you're always kind of trying to justify yourself as more than just a fellow little maniac?
Oh yeah.
You know the way, I'd imagine this is how, because I remember saying this to, we had Ardlo Hanlon on. He was one of our very first guests, and I remember thinking, like, how do you feel about always being known as Dougal from Father Ted?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, no matter what, you're always going to be Dougal.
Yeah.
No matter what else you do, and he's going to have a great career in comedy, but like, you will always refer to him as Dougal.
Yeah.
You've had a big career, like, over 30 years doing this.
Yeah.
And you'll always be known for Maniac.
Yeah.
So were you conflicted with that whole thing?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Are you at peace with that now? Absolutely. Or are you still doing it?
Absolutely. I was like, I don't want to be this guy.
Mm.
I want to be a cool, credible DJ, you know? I don't want this to define me, is the way that I was looking at it back then. And I went off and I did, I got signed to a label called Twisted in New York, which was one of the coolest, most credible labels, you know, on the planet at that time, run by Danny Tenaglia. So I did it and I knew that I could do it. But I didn't want, I absolutely did not want to be that one-hit wonder.
Mm.
And it tore me up for a long time. And that's where I just walked away from it. I was just like, I'm done with this. You know, I don't want to be part of this game. I'm sick of trying. Because I got signed to Universal after that was released. And they were looking for we want another Maniac.
Yeah.
I was like, how do you top that?
Yeah.
Like, you can't top that. Like, and I wasn't in the position. Technically, I didn't know what I was doing in the studio to be able to fulfill what they wanted, you know. So we released a couple of singles. I did an album with them and it was like over here compared to what Maniac was. Like, it was a concept album. It was like experimental. And it was not what my audience wanted. And I guess what happened was in 2015 was I realized what that audience was and where they were and what they wanted. And that was the Electric Picnic in 2015, which was a gig that was like, for me, what was going on in my life at that time, I needed to do something. They came up with an opportunity for me to play this nostalgia stage. I went, okay, it'll be grand. There'll be a couple of hundred there. It'll be awkward, but sure, look, it's a corporate sponsor and they're going to throw me a load of cash for it. So why wouldn't I do it? And it's weird because I would never have done it if certain things weren't happening in my life at that time. So it's like everything for a reason. It just came along again and it pushed me. And I remember sitting there thinking no one's going to show up. And on the way over, we had done an interview actually with News Talk, which I was really uncomfortable with because I was like, why am I talking about Maniac on News Talk? Mm. Like, you know, and I got a text to say tent's full. And I was like, what? Got over there and it was just absolutely rammed. And there was this mist over everybody. And the sun was coming down and it was just getting to that. And it was just like, what the fuck is this? Like, what are all these people? Like, and then we started and it was like two tracks in and people started going, Maniac, Maniac, Maniac. And I was like, I've got a 45 minute set here. Hang on. But something happened that night and somebody said to me, you've got a movement there. Like, you've got a movement there, you know. Go and feed that movement. Mm. And that's what I did. I stopped thinking about the critics or the articles that had been written about me or, you know, this Muppet, what's this track, you know, so uncool. All of that just disappeared and just became, actually, I could see that person. I could see the person who's enjoying this and I could actually look at them and see how much they were enjoying it. And I was like, what are you talking about? Fuck like, them, fuck that. Yeah, like, this is what it's about, you know? And I embraced that as much as I could. And then I just started to kind of go again. Yeah. I went back to where I probably should have and I started to produce again. And I went through a bit of a kick and a click era, which is a kick and a click and remix for Gavin James and kind of helped him get off the ground with his career because the remix that we did went gold and platinum all over Europe, you know? So in the background, the reason I'm saying that is not for, you know, I mean, great. It's more that I was able to still keep doing the stuff with a clearer head.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter that it was slightly different or whatever. It was still doing what I loved doing.
Yeah.
And Maniac was still there.
Yeah. And I think Maniac kind of gives you the allowance. As I know you said back then when you got signed the first time, you weren't probably ready technically, but like...
Or mentally.
Yeah. But it gives you this credibility to try a few things and say, look, here's... I don't know, five other projects I've been working on and people might be like, right, I know his name. Maybe if it's because of Maniac, so what, but I'll give those five other songs a listen.
Yeah.
And maybe they like one of them now.
Yeah.
But now they know when they come and see you, he's going to play this and he's going to play that.
Yeah.
And this is the type of genre of music that he's into, so he's going to play a good set.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, ultimately, I guess what it proved to me is that I could do it.
Yeah.
Whether people enjoyed it or not, I could do it. I was proving to myself that I could do it, you know. And it didn't matter what anybody was saying or how big Maniac was or how long it was big for. I can still say that, like, I almost got to 500 million streams on Spotify without Maniac.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't care if you know that.
Yeah.
I know it.
Yeah.
So I know I can do it, you know? And then in the last couple of years with the sort of re-energizing again of Maniac 10 years later, you know, for the 25th anniversary, it's just all changed again. And it's changed. What's happened is it all makes sense. It's not that I'm trying to play Maniac when house music is massive, you know, at 122 beats per minute and Maniac's at 132 and I play it at 138 because it's Scooter. You know, I'm not trying to play what's popular or whatever. It's all just one now.
Yeah.
So I can go out and I can play a set and I can play stuff that people who are 50 or 60 know, but also people who are 20 or 25 know and love just as much, you know? It's like, most obvious example is Gala, Freed from Desire.
Yeah.
A song from the mid-90s
is
as popular now
as it ever has
been, you know? Yeah. So being able to go into a venue or a festival or an event and play a set that all makes sense for me is just like, this is...
Yeah, well, that's the thing about dance music. It is kind of timeless, isn't it? Like, we've often spoke with people who've done music on this podcast about like the stuff that Armand Az would have listened to growing up. We listened to secondhand, like you had no choice, it was on in the house or whatever, but like you put it on now, no one's going to say knock that off, it's too old. It's, you know what I mean, these are classics, like dance classics. they age like fucking fine wine, like, and I think it's only when you get older you kind of appreciate it more, and then you know who these DJs or the producers are, and you know the body of work, it's great. Like,
yeah, that's a really special thing for me to play a show at, like a festival like the Electric Picnic,
yeah,
and to see generations from 15, you know, or to see kids on their parents' shoulders.
Yeah.
And they're loving it just as much as their parents who are 45 or 50 are, you know.
And you done EP last year as well.
Did it last
year.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we were at that, and there's actually a picture of me on my mate's shoulders.
Oh, no.
Not my dad now, obviously. No, my elder bleeding hold me. But there's a picture, my missus has a picture of me on my mate's shoulders, and like you're on the stage. It's funny, like.
Class.
But kind of going full circle, I was like, what's the awkwardest gig you played in? Like, I'm playing the Three Arena now. You know what I mean? It's like, when you want to go full circle, you're like, oh, I was playing this gig, I didn't know I was going to go downstairs and do it or not. Now we're doing like fucking biggest venue in the country.
Yeah, and that's the weird thing is I've done it like, I think I've done it flipping six times.
Yeah.
And it's mad because it feels so comfortable. And it's like that now. Like I'd have more of a problem going into a small club and playing to 200 people because they can see, I can, you know, see you and whatever. Confidence is getting better, but I just feel really at home in that big space, you know? That's my dream as a kid, you know? There's the lights, there's the smoke machine, there's the stage, there's that room, you know, that you can go in and you can just transform things for 60 minutes, whatever, and people love it. Just a little more.
Before we get back into the podcast, a quick shout out to Whoop, who are supporting the podcast with an incredible competition. All the Talking Bollocks listeners can sign up right now and get 1 month free. Whoop will send you out the device free of charge and you can try it for 30 days and see what your body's really telling you. But there's an exclusive competition as well. Anyone who signs up for the 1 month free trial at join.whoop.com/bollocks will be entered into a draw to be upgraded to a 12-month Whoop membership with an accessory kit, a sleep and recovery stack, a pair of Nike Alpha Flyers, and a ticket for the Troika Race 3 this coming April, all worth over €1,000. This is an offer that's honestly too good to turn down. So don't forget, head to join.whoop.com/bollocks. Sign up for the 30-day free trial and be in with a chance to win that unbelievable prize. Well, all thanks to the lads over at Whoop.
The club and nightclub scene in Ireland, it's bleeding, like it's literally dead. Like they're only short of finding a nail in the coffin. So like, what do you think we can do, Mark, to kind of bring back the glory days of what you come up in? Have you ever thinking about like bringing back the likes of, not obviously not the exact venue, but like something similar to one of the nights that you'd have in the temple, but like in a different venue around?
There's definitely an opportunity to do stuff in spaces that wouldn't necessarily be used for that type of thing on a regular basis. Like Fred Again in the RDS, in that industrial atmosphere, was just class. You can't fake that in a venue, you know. It's not going to work the same in somewhere like the Three Arena.
Yeah,
it's just something dirty and sort of industrial about
it's
that
not
space.
Supposed to be here.
It's not supposed to be there, exactly. Like it feels like a dirty rave. Look, the nightclub scene has failed in this country for a number of reasons. It's not just one individual reason, but like, there's been an awful lot of milking people for what they can, you know, and there's been some clubs and venues that haven't put back into the venues, more so in rural Ireland than the city. And if you're in a small town in rural Ireland and you've got one or two nightclubs to choose from and you're going in there twice a month, three times a month, and your feet are sticking to the floor and you're paying €15 in at the door and it's the same shit, different fucking day, why would you?
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that, you know? And at the same time, it's hard for perhaps the owners because they don't have the turnover that they need. They've got problems with VAT, you know, insurance claims and all of that. So, like, I feel for people in that situation, but I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with what's happened. It's just a natural progression.
Yeah.
And I think it's turned people into being a little bit more creative. Like, I mean, Index is one of the best clubs in the world. Like, it's rated in there. It's in the top 100 in terms of like atmosphere and vibe. they're doing it properly. If you want to go and have a few drinks and, you know, listen to a few tunes, there's plenty of places to go that you can go to. This business of paying in at 11 o'clock and going in, you know, to a nightclub as such, most of those clubs are running over 30s nights and they're finished at 11 o'clock and they're stuffed.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just, it's a, like, it's a generational thing. I don't think the appetite is there for it. So
I don't know. I think the appetite is there because I think when any time any European act or overseas act comes to Dublin or anywhere in Ireland, it sells out. So I remember like 10 years ago, you'd be spoiled by choice. Like there'd be three or four massive DJs playing and you'd be like, I can't go and see him because we're going to see him. And it's like now, you'd be lucky to get one a month, you know? And I don't know whether it's down to, I don't think it's down to the lack of appetite because any time they're playing, they're sold out.
Yeah, you know? But exactly. I think it's feeding it enough to make it something big and special.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's diluted and you've got two or three, then perhaps the 5,000 people that were out that night, you know, decided that they were going to go different places and it's sort of diluted down a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think we had it too good for too long to a certain extent. There was too many venues. There was, you know, like you say, there was people coming in.
I remember you'd go to District E and you could go like on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yeah.
And like, that was a great venue. Again, that was like, what's that, an old cinema, I think it was, wasn't it? The old Tivoli Theatre or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
Like, that was class. Hangar was basically a hangar.
Yeah.
And there was a load of venues around the city. Now they're just all gone. So I don't know if it's as simple as like, oh, we're hitting the target just enough that we're keeping it going. I'd love to see somebody say, look, here's an old whatever, here's an old church, or here's an old office
absolutely
block, or here's a car park,
we're
bringing this into a rave
every
Saturday going forward. And I think if you build it, they will come.
It's a tough one, right? Because if the demand was there for it and there was money to be made, I'm pretty sure somebody would have figured out how to do it. Like, I know there's guys that are thinking about it, but they haven't pulled the trigger on it yet for whatever reason, you know. I definitely agree in terms of, you know, we need cultural spaces. Like, I was an advocate for a place called The Factory down in Barrow Street. That was the hub for music in Ireland at one stage. It was dance studios, it was recording studios, it was PA companies. Like, if you were touring the Corrs or Westlife in their heyday, they were there rehearsing, you know. Something like that is most definitely missing, with a venue, you know, attached to it. So you make it work that if it's not doing a rehearsal one day, it does a venue another day or something. So there's an absolute total disregard for cultural expansion or development in this country. 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
But as for six venues, just so that we could have eight DJs over every weekend, I just don't think it's viable. Yeah. We don't have the population for it. Look at drum sheds in the UK. Like, they've got the population base to support something like that. I just don't think we have it, unfortunately, you know?
Yeah. Maybe it's just me being nostalgic and thinking back to fucking in your early 20s and you're just like,
spoiled for choice.
Yeah, and like, people are playing in the Olympia and everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's mad, like, when you're in the Olympia now, when you're watching a comedian or something, you're thinking, like, we went there, right?
We were right there,
You know? It's mad.
Yeah, I saw The Prodigy there and, like, sure, those. Yeah, yeah. And look, there was a stage where there was Tripod, there was Pod, there was flipping the Olympia was buying, there was the Tivoli, the SFX, Temple Theatre, all of those were running. But, like, I don't know. I just don't think there's, like, there's an appetite, 100%, but there's more of an appetite for District 8 in the Garden.
Yeah.
You know, or something else.
See, yeah, and I don't mean to keep going back and forth on it, but I'm thinking, is it just because that's the only option that people are like, of course we're going to go to that, I think we've nothing else to go to, you know? Well,
yeah, it's a deep one because, I mean, when you look at the Three Arena and, you know, the shows that are run there, there's a lot of grief.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing. There's a lot of misbehaving. Yeah. So it's a tricky one because people might want to run them, but at the same time they're going, it's just not worth the grief, you know? So
a lot of red tape to get around as well, I suppose.
Yeah.
How does it feel, Mark, right? So can't call you an MC, so we'll call you a DJ, right? How does it feel to be the DJ with the biggest wedding tune ever?
So it'll be the biggest funeral song soon. That's why I reckon, you know, it's going to move, progress.
The demographic is aging out.
Got married and it was their wedding tune. They'll eventually start dying. So it'll be the funeral song. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Like Ed Sheeran said, writing his whole life thinking that he's at the nail on the head and it's like, nah, mate, fuck you and believe whatever song.
Not in Ireland anyway.
Not here.
Yeah, it's mad. Like, it's mad that it just has managed to instill itself in Irish society in the way that it has. You know?
It's cultural. Like it's like a guarantee.
Yeah.
When it comes to fucking weddings, it's like she's gonna throw the flowers and we're gonna play Mania.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. Like it's, you know what I mean? There's no if, ands, or buts. It's like tradition. You have to do it.
Yeah.
Siobhan, do they play at weddings in Galway?
Yeah.
Oh, it's broken.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and look, I get messages from people all the time saying we had it as our first dance, or we had it as our entry song, our walk-in song, and stuff like that. I'm just like, wow, that's incredible, you know? It really is.
We ended up having to do it live at our last live show because we tried to book you, but you were in America.
No way.
And
no way.
We were like, what the fuck are we going to do now? And then we were like, you know what, will we just do it ourselves? And we ended up just doing it.
I don't know,
do we owe money or anything now for this? Or?
I think you would have paid a royalty.
Yeah. But we ended up having to do it. That's what happened. It was like, Mark McCabe, and then I don't know, there was some sort of loss, something was lost in translation somewhere, because we were convinced that we had you booked in. I was like, that's going to be class. And then someone was like, you know, he's in America. And I was like, why did no one tell us last week?
No way.
Yeah, that's what you were in America in the summer?
I was, yeah.
That's when I was, yeah.
That was with the two Johnnies.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's all coming out now.
And it was, it was flipping weird because it was like 60% Irish but 40% American.
Yeah.
And the Americans were just like,
what's going on here?
What's going on here? What is this? Like, but they were loving it by the end of it. They were like, because they just, you can't, like, at first you're kind of scratching your head. You know, if you're not from Ireland, you're kind of like, what's this? But then you see the energy, and like, as it starts to build and grow, people start to, like, understand it slightly more.
Yeah, plus people know the song, even if you don't know your version of it.
Yeah, exactly.
They know the original version. Yeah. So it's like, so.
Jeez, I'm sorry about that. Next one.
He owes us one now.
Next one, I owe you one for
sure. Write that down.
But, for sure.
We couldn't have set it up well because we're like, can everyone be upstanding before we leave for the national anthem? And I could hear the toots and there was eye rolls and people going by the exit and all. And obviously when the music kicks in, people stopped. It was great. It worked out very well in the end. Have you got anything you need to plug, Mike?
I'm doing a show on the Olympia. There you go. 2nd of April.
2nd of April, that's only around the corner.
Yeah, Bad Thursday. It's the day before Good Friday.
Right.
And it's kind of really, it's special. And it's special because the first job that I ever actually got where I was officially paid was in the Olympia, following that childhood dream of, you know, working in a stage. And I remember being at home after a show in the Olympia. I can't remember exactly who it was. It might have been Groover Matter or somebody like that. But I remember going, you know, how could I play the Olympia? How could I get to that point? And it's weird because I'm kind of, like you said, I've done the Three Arena.
Yeah.
I've done Fairview Park. Like, I've done all these huge, I've done Boucher Road in Belfast, you know, all these massive events. And doing the Olympia just seems like it's really special. One, because it's in the area where a lot of, you know, nightclubs like Club Zazu and all of these clubs from the late 90s were. But just because it's the Olympia, it's a really special venue.
Mm.
And I just feel really privileged to actually be given the opportunity to play there. So I'm really looking forward to it. I feel like it's a lot of people who would have, you know, been at the sort of founding nights or nightclubs that we were running back in the Pulse days. I've seen that quite a few of them are going to show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. So 2nd of April.
They won't mind heading out now as well because there's no Good Friday. You know, you had to be able to pull by 12 o'clock.
No, that's all gone
now. So that generation will love that. Yeah. the exact people you're talking about. Yeah. Siobhan, have you got any questions?
Yeah, we actually have like a DJ themed one for you.
Oh, yeah.
So Ed Smith, do you know him? He used to work in Today FM.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Ed wrote this one for you. So he wants you to blind rank the people who would be in a crowd at a show.
Okay.
Yeah, you know what blind rank is? So how many of them is there?
5.
So like you have 5.
No, sorry,
like,
4. Yeah.
So you have to, she's going to throw one out, sort of as far as I'm sorry, and you have to pick them 1 to 4 where they are, but you're not going to know what the next one is.
Sure.
So
let's go.
Right, so 1 is the worst, 4 is the best. So the classic, I used to do a bit of DJing myself.
Oh, I'm a DJ myself, bud.
Yeah.
We'll go 3 just in case.
Okay. Holding up the phone with a request on it.
Oh, there's nothing worse. It could be worse. Well, obviously, I'm not a DJ, so I don't know what it's like. But when I see people doing that, I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah. It's just normally met with, you know, thumbs up. No problem.
Yeah.
No intention. We'll go 2.
Okay. Demanding a song you've literally just played.
So 4 is the worst?
Yeah.
That's 4. Because it's just like, what are you doing? Where were you? You know? Or were you asleep? Or
that's probably why they want to play it, because they heard it and they were like, that's a great song.
Yeah.
But they didn't put the two things together.
DJ replay.
Yeah. And then the last one is constantly asking for some obscure song that would kill the vibe.
Oh, yeah, I should have kept them both. Yeah, I can only go number one with that. But yeah, that hasn't happened so much anymore.
Yeah,
like, that's what I'm saying.
It's
kind of like they get it. Like, I've had a few. And look, a lot of the time, the song they choose is actually a belter, you know, but it's just like, nah, that's not, it's just going to work here, you know?
Kingfisher. I mean, like, I know it's probably number one in the country at the minute, but like, come on, like, read the room.
Yeah, time and place.
Yeah. Actually, speaking of number ones, you got number one, I feel, when it mattered to have a number one. I felt like when it was hard to get, I don't want to downplay anyone who has a number one recently, but I felt like it meant more back then you were number one.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas now, like, you don't give a fuck who's number one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If a tune is good, you're going to listen to it. You don't really care if it gets its accolades. Always top 10. I don't care.
You can get a number one now, but it'll be a number one for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Like, that's the really sad thing to a certain extent, because it's just like, it's moving so fast and it's just driven so much by the stats, you know? Whereas when Maniac was originally released, we were up against, in the first week of release, we were up against the Backstreet Boys, Madonna, Westlife. And Madonna in particular, Warner had put like 40K into, you know, ensuring that her track, I can't remember exactly what it was at the time, was going to go number one. And it didn't. And it was like, what's this? You know, this thing that's like...
McKay? Mark?
Yeah.
Who?
On Abbey Discs. Like, who are Abbey Discs? So it really mattered. And people were watching top 30 hits on the TV, and that's where you saw what was number one on the chart show. It was like, and this week's number one. And yeah, it really mattered. Like, it's not like that, unfortunately, anymore, you know.
American Pie.
Yeah.
In fairness, she did budget that.
So, yeah.
You're like, that's not even her song.
But stop Westlife getting 7 consecutive number ones in Ireland. So the lads,
Nicky Bone has the hump with you, does he?
He's made it. He's the one. He's actually the one who was doing a radio show in 2015 and thought it'd be a great idea to celebrate the fact that Maniac was 15 years old, and it went back to number one again on iTunes for a day.
Yeah.
And that's what kicked it all off again. So he's part to blame for keeping the ball rolling, to be honest with you.
It's nice that he wasn't spoiled about it.
No, not at all. No,
didn't hold it against you.
Yeah, not at all.
Is there anyone coming up now that you look at and you're like, oh, like, they're doing something really exciting?
Yeah, like, there's so many good dance producers in Ireland, and Dublin in particular. There's a whole scene there that was started by Robbie and Bissett.
Yeah.
Like, that whole sin thing, you know? I mean, that was the equivalent of, like, what we were doing, but more recently, where it was, you know, it was a vibe and a click and a scene. And they had their mates, and they had the, you know, the tunes, and they played the tunes, and their mates came, and their mates came, and then, you know, it just grew and it spiraled from that, you know.
Yeah.
And they're doing a really good job of kind of nurturing the lads that are there, like Ev McGee and Ev Wild and all of those heads, and they're just banging out some really, like, Ev McGee in particular, just the groove of his tunes. It's just like, it's so sweet, so nice, and they're all like, they just deserve more than what they, where they're at this minute, and I'm hoping that they do sort of get their chance to.
That's because there's not enough venues, Mark.
True, yeah.
No, it is. They should, them lads have their own, like, record label and all.
Yeah.
Mental to think that now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, that's, whereas crazy. Back when you were coming up, it's like you were knocking on doors. They're like, no, we're just gonna make our own door.
Yeah, yeah.
It's mad.
Robbie had from Belters, he had a problem with his iMac. And it wasn't working, and his hard drive failed, and I drove over to his gaff and I picked it up for him, and I brought it back to my gaff, fixed it, and dropped it back to him. This is before Belters Only or whatever, you know, because I was listening, like, Robbie's melody and the way that he can translate something into something completely different, the way he can remix is just insane. Like, he sees things from a different planet, basically. He'll hear something and see it from a totally different perspective, and when you hear where he's gone with something, you're gone, that's just insane. Like, and his riffs and his melodies, like, a lot of stuff that they've done in the past that hasn't been as successful as the more recent stuff is just, like, amazing.
All the OGs will remember of leading Robbie G's remix on Bended Knee.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There you go. Yeah,
but it just goes to show you as well, like, those lads, they're not an overnight success, you know what I mean?
They grafted.
They plugged away, and that's the thing, like yourself, Mark, what you were saying, there's a body of work there. It's not just, oh, here's this one thing I did. No, it's a lot more to it than that, you know. It's just that, for some reason, that rose above the rest of them, you know. And I'm sure it's like that with a lot of producers and DJs. You going to do a bonus episode with me, Mark?
Yeah.
So what we'll do is we'll get just listener questions.
Sure.
They could be anything. So feel free to run away with them.
Yeah, yeah.
We want it all be music themed. But thanks for coming in.
Not at all, my
pleasure.
2nd
of April in the Olympia.
That's it, yeah.
Ticketmaster,
Maniac,
I imagine.
Maniac and other bangers.
Yeah.
We're extending it out a little bit. It's no longer about Maniac on its own. It's other bangers as well.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, it's like, it's a trip down memory lane. Like, there's a lot of nostalgia there. But what I try and do, I'm plugging this because people, I think, as you say, sometimes it's just, oh, Maniac, that's deadly. There's like a whole set there. I have a vocalist with me.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, her name is Mimi Lane. She's insane. Her vocals are so good.
She played the point with you the last time.
She did the three arena last time. Yeah. Class. Old school point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she did
that's always the point. Well. I always call it the point. Yeah. So.
But yeah, this, I'm kind of, I have a few things sort of lined up for this as well. So we're trying to take it on a little bit, but it's, I've tried to present some of that old school nostalgia, but in a way that is just flipping banging.
Mm.
So
brilliant. So Ticketmaster.
Yeah. Ticketmaster.
Yeah.
Tickets.
Get on, get you the tickets. Take us out, Siobhan. Before we wrap up, I just wanted to give a shout out to Roy Soil Furniture for teaming up with the podcast. Is your gaffer over you some TLC? Sort it all out at once with Roy Soil Furniture. They got proper quality stuff. Sofa, bed, dining sets, and the house package sale is unreal. And you're supporting an Irish family-run business that actually knows what good service looks like. Plus, they're in Fonthill, Belgard, and now in Omni Park as well. Open 7 days a week and late on Thursdays and Fridays in Fonthill and Omni, so there's no excuse. Get down and get the gaff sorted. Right price, right style, right now. Visit www.roystyle.ie and when you shop in-store, tell them that the two boys from the podcast sent you and they'll throw you in a little discount. So get down to Roy Style Furniture today.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in it now. Fill your body up in. Work it hard and slow. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Go down.